Get ready for Malice, a twisted new drama starring Jack Whitehall, David Duchovny, and Carice Van Houten. Jack Whitehall plays Adam, a charming Manny infiltrates the wealthy Tanner family with a hidden motive to destroy them. This edge-of-your-seat revenge thriller unravels a deliciously dark mystery in a world full of wealth, secrets, and betrayal. Malice will constantly keep you on your toes. Why is Adam after the Tanner family? What lengths will he go to? One thing's for sure, the past never stays buried, so keep your enemies close. Watch all episodes of Malice on November 14th, only on Prime Video.
Horns up and welcome to another episode of Headbangers Kitchen. We've got Sixth on the show today, all the way from the UK. And I'm going to be cooking up a Sikh kebab for them, which is my take on the traditional Sikh kebab made from beef and wrapped in a delicious soft flatbread with some kachumbar and a delicious garlic and spring onion dip to go with it. It's going to be epic and metal. Let's go make that Sikh kebab. So we're first going to make the dough for our flatbread because this needs time to rest. And what will happen is the yeast that we use in the dough is going to sort of make the dough rise and you're going to have a delicious soft flatbread. So we're going to take a cup of all-purpose flour and add in some salt to that. And for some extra flavor, we're going to add in some cumin powder. Now you can use whatever kind of seasoning you like. You can add pepper, you can add garlic, you can add garam masala, you can add chili. The world is your oyster. Use whatever you want in your naan. So I'm just going to mix these dry ingredients in and then I'm going to add a nice big glug of olive oil. Now I'm not sticking to the typical Indian flavors, which is why I'm going for olive oil, but you can use whatever oil you have at home. I'm just going to mix this in together nicely. And you'll see that the dough is sort of coming together little by little. And to this, I'm going to add half a cup of water to which I've added some yeast and is now all active and bubbly and all that. So I'm going to add this in and mix it together. And the yeast is what will help the dough to sort of rise and make it nice and soft. So just add that in and mix everything together. As you can see, I don't like getting my hands dirty, so I'm using a spoon. But feel free to go in there with your hands. I will eventually do that anyway. So now you can see all your dough is coming together nicely. And you want a nice soft dough. If the dough is too hard, then your flatbread will be more crispy. So if you prefer a crispy flatbread, you know, make a stiff dough. Now it's time for me to get down and dirty with this dough. So I'm just going to put a little oil on my hands and work that dough. Once all of it has come together like this, we're just going to take the dough out, put a little flour on our work surface, a little on the dough, and just knead the dough. Now, once we are done kneading the dough, I'm just going to put a little more oil on it. Just get that nice and oiled up. So now that this is done, we're going to cover this with a damp towel and leave it for an hour in a nice warm spot to almost double in size. And then we can make our delicious flatbread from it. All right, so now it's time to make the kebab that goes into the Sikh kebab. And I'm using 500 grams of beef mince, and you can make this kebab with whatever meat you like. You can use chicken, pork, mutton, lamb, turkey, kangaroo, alligator, whatever animal is legal and available in your supermarket. So I'm going to start by just seasoning it with some salt, some freshly ground pepper, some cayenne pepper for a little bit of heat, some paprika for a nice smoky flavor. I'm using something called sumac, which gives it a slightly tangy and lemony flavor. Now, if you can't find sumac, you can just use a little bit of lemon juice or even some lemon zest, you know, to sort of give it a little bit of freshness. I'm also going to spice it up a little bit with some garam masala and some cumin powder. I'm also going to add some ginger garlic paste. And finally, my last ingredient is fried onion paste. Now, if you're wondering what is this fried onion paste, you basically chop up two onions, deep fry it, and then make a paste out of it. And this adds a next level of flavor. I mean, you gotta taste it to believe it. Then we're gonna mix all these together. So now the kebab mixture is ready and I'm gonna shape the kebabs. And I'm going to use metal skewers because, I don't know, I just like the way it turns out with that. You don't have to use a skewer, you can make it in whatever shape or form you like. And you can grill these or pan fry them, whatever your choice. I'm gonna pan fry it though. So you take your skewer, take a good helping of the beef. Now I'm looking to make four massive sikh kebabs, so I'm taking a big chunk of meat. I'm just gonna skewer it on. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been performed by professionals. Please do try this at home. That's one big ass sikh kebab. So our kebabs have been made and are now ready to be cooked. Not quite though. I'm going to leave it in the fridge for about 15 minutes just to firm up. Meanwhile, I'm going to whip up a delicious kachumbar or a salsa and a yogurt-based dip to go with the kebab. So let's put these in the fridge for 15 minutes before I pan fry them. So now we're going to make the kachumbar or salad or salsa or whatever you want to call it that's going to go in our sikh kebab. And I'm going to use one grated carrot and just use your normal kitchen grater to grate this. Half of a white radish grated as well and some freshly chopped coriander. I'm going to just squeeze a little lime over this. A small glug of olive oil, a little salt, a little pepper, and a wee bit of paprika. And you can also chop up a green chili and add it to this if you like it spicy. And now I just mix all of this together. Give it a little taste. Perfecto mundo. This will go nicely in our kebab. So we're going to put this in the fridge as well now to chill and make our yogurt dip. So now we're going to make a delicious garlic and spring onion and yogurt dip, which we're going to use on our kebab. So I'm going to start by using 200 grams of yogurt. And to that, I'm going to add some cream cheese. Now, what you can also do is if you don't want to use cheese, you can just hang the curd for a while, which will give it a firm texture, and you won't need the cheese then. I'm just going to mix these two together. Now to this, I'm going to add one chopped spring onion. This gives it a delicious flavor as well as some crunch. Next, I add in some chopped garlic. Mix this in well. We're just going to give it a sprinkling of salt, a little bit of black pepper, and one final mix. Give it a little taste. That's perfectly seasoned. So now we're gonna leave this to chill in the fridge while we get our sikh kebab ready. So now we're gonna fry our kebabs. And like I said earlier, you can barbecue these, you can cook them any way you like. I find that pan frying is the easiest way to cook them. And that's exactly what I'm gonna do. So I've got my pan on a medium high heat and I'm just going to pour in some oil. In fact, I'm using the same oil in which I cooked the onions. So what that does is it adds a slight depth of flavor because of the onions. And make sure your pan is nice and hot and place your sikh kebab in it. Now I'm just going to fry two at a time because these guys are massive. This should take about 2 to 3 minutes tops on each side. I'm gonna turn one, yeah? So our kebabs are now fried and ready. It's time to make the flatbread and then assemble the sixth kebab. So as you can see, our dough has risen quite a bit and now it's time to roll out our flatbread. So I'm just going to flour my work surface a little bit, as well as my hands. And I'm going to just break out a piece of the dough, just as much as I would need for the flatbread. And you can see it's lovely, spongy and elastic. I'm just going to roll this out. Now it's time to cook this. And ideally you should use a non-stick pan for this so that nothing sticks. There's nothing worse than broken flatbread. Pick up your bread, flatbread, and just lay it out in the pan. Now it's time to flip it over. You can see it's cooked nicely on this side. I'm just going to add a small knob of butter and just rub this all over the naan. And our flatbread is ready. And now it's time to assemble the sixth kebab. So now it's time, the moment you've all been waiting for, the moment where we assemble the sixth kebab. So our flatbread is ready. And we're going to use some of that kachumbar, aka salad, aka salsa, whatever you want to call it. Then we add our kebab. Now remember to take the skewer out, yes? And finally, we drizzle on some of that delicious garlic and spring onion dip that we made. Look at that, delicious and creamy. So there you have it, folks. The sixth kebab is ready, and I'm going to wait for sixth to come and taste this now. Welcome back to Headbangers Kitchen. My guests today are one of the sickest bands on the planet. They were a band that was ahead of their time and are one kick-ass live act. I've got with me the pioneers of the modern progressive genre from the UK. I've got Dan and Dan from Sixth. Hey guys, how are you doing?
Good. Good, thanks. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks for the intro as well.
My pleasure. So first up, I mean, you guys had a kick-ass set last night. You just blew Mumbai away. How was it for you guys? How was the experience?
Oh, it was incredible.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, it's great. I feel really privileged to be able to come all the way over here and play a show like that. And to get that kind of reaction the first time you come to a country is amazing. Yeah, we were well pleased.
It's great. It's one of those nights where you sort of, you keep looking out thinking, is this actually happening? Is it such a unique experience for us, you know? So, yeah.
And how was the festival for you guys? I mean, you, apart from your performance, obviously, how did you like the vibe of the festival, you know?
Great, it was awesome. I mean, it was actually really well organized. The sound was great, all the bands sounded really good. It's not quite up to health and safety standards in the UK in some ways, but I think it's got a lot of character. It's amazing to see a festival in a place like that, and very unique. Smashing up that car.
That car, yes.
The sledgehammer.
Did you have a go at it?
I didn't, he did.
Yeah, I did. I was straight in there.
Pin had a go as well.
Yeah.
Was it therapeutic in any way?
Yeah, we were sort of, you know, in the midst of jet lag, so being able to smash something was kind of quite a nice way of waking yourself up. But no, it was amazing. And I have to say, like, you know, we have been around the world a bit, and generally, you know, Indian people, I think English and Indian people really connect on a personality level. We're very similar. There's a lot of the same banter. So that's one thing I'll personally take away from coming to India, is just how cool everyone is. But it's been really pleasurable to hang out with people, you know. You can really connect with people. It's the same with our friends from Nepal as well. I think there's a real common ground between us on a personality level, which is really important, because, you know, that's part of travelling in a band. Isn't just playing a gig and remembering that and then leaving. It's sort of making friends. That's important for us. So that's something that's special that we can take away.
And you had the vocalist of Underside join you guys on stage for a song. So how did that come about? Was that planned, or was it like a spontaneous thing?
I think Mikey had asked him to do it before the show. Yeah, we knew that Another Sinking Ship was the one that he wanted to do. So and that was great. We really enjoyed it.
And he's really good, that guy. He's a really great metal vocalist and a lovely guy. And they were so good to us when we were in Kathmandu. They put us up, and, you know, we spent a lot of time with them. So we knew he was really into that song, so it was just seemed like a nice thing to do.
Awesome, that's fantastic. So let's talk a little bit about your music now. You know, you guys started out way back in 1999-2000 approximately, I think. Mm-hmm. And the kind of music that you played, a lot of people believe that has like sort of laid the foundation for what we call djent or modern progressive metal today. You know, how did you guys go in this direction? You know, what inspired you to sort of create this kind of music?
It's probably it's quite a hard thing to say. I think one of the things we're lucky with our band, and I think which is why we've created a sound that's maybe quite unique, was that we're all quite unique as musicians and all quite ambitious, you know. So when you put people like that together, that because normally with bands you have maybe one or two really creative people and then everybody else just joins in to be in a band and they sort of play what the other guys write. Whereas with Sixth, everybody was very driven at their own instrument, so that was something that enabled us to make music that maybe not every band could make. You know, it'd be very hard for the average band to come and cover a Sixth song because you'd need to be able to play drums like him or whatever, you know what I mean? Or you'd need to have two singers, one with kind of Mikey's voice or whatever. So when you put unique elements together, it just kind of creates something that sits on its own. And I think that's why we were lucky, really. And it kind of, I mean, I can say while he's here with me now, me and Pin formed the band, but it was only when Dan joined that it became this really unique thing, because the rhythmic element to the band is such a key part.
Yeah.
So that changed everything, you know.
I mean, yeah, like I say, for me, one of the things that really appealed to me about way back when I was asked to join it is just the ambition of the guys. You know, him and Pim went to school together, but pretty much everyone else, and originally the guys that were in the band before us, before anyone really heard the music that we make now, you guys went to school together, but it was always your ambition to try and push things as much as you possibly could. And unlike any band I've been in, it was like, let's find the very best musicians that we can. I mean, that's more common these days. You know, people are making projects with people from all over the world over the internet. But back when we were making bands, it was just like you formed a band with the best musicians that you knew in the local area, and yeah, then you went out and gigged. Whereas these guys from day one...
There was no internet situation.
Exactly, yeah. Whereas these guys from day one were like, nah, we want to do this, and if you can't do this, we're going to find someone who can do this. And
yeah, we were really quite ruthless in an honest way. We were like, we know what we want to do. But me and Pin had grown up listening to all the sort of classic metal bands, classic Metallica and Pantera and Sepultura, but we were also really into death metal. We used to go to lots of death metal gigs. And we were never into the kind of the imagery side of death metal. We were just into the riffs and the music and the writing and the playing. And we taught ourselves to play guitar. So me and Pin would often teach each other, like, how are you doing that? And that, so we pushed each other on. But we felt like there was a gap there for something to be extremely technical, extremely progressive, but not to have all the death metal imagery, to have all the kind of the sorts of more macabre visual stuff, more a kind of it was only when we found Mikey that suddenly the personality to the music came through with the lyrics and stuff. So I think we felt like there was something melodic and really embracing that could be made that could still be really technical, because you know, Sixth songs are all kind of built of ultimately tiny little hooks and melodies, whether it be the rhythms or the riffs or the vocals, they're chock full of melody. There's never anything really just atonal for the sake of it, yeah. You know.
So I also want to ask you, what's the story behind the name Sixth?
That's one of the questions that we always hate to answer. I mean, I wasn't there when you guys come up with it, but I'm kind of assuming that it's something to do with the fact that there were six members.
It's literally that.
Yeah.
We were in Pin's parents' living room with our old drummer, funnily enough, Gaz, and we were just couldn't come up with a name, and we had all these terrible names, like, you know, we've all been there in a metal band, you're just writing lists of names that you write, you say it out loud, and then everyone goes, yeah, yeah, and then you leave the room, and you come back in, and you go, what the that's the worst name ever. So we just ended up looking at the fact that there were six of us, and then someone said Sixth with an X, and we thought, that just looks a bit crap, and then someone just said, why don't we just change it for a K, and then we were like, yeah. And that was it.
So when you guys started out, what was it like touring back then, and also what was the kind of response that you guys got to the music that you were playing? Because like I mentioned, I felt that it was sort of ahead of its time almost, you know, in some ways.
Well, so the band kind of went through stages, I suppose. When we first came out, it was like, obviously, no one really cared that much. When we did that initial first ever tour together with this lineup, which everyone knows, no one really knows their lineup before me, James and Justin joined, but we did a tour with the new band, as the incarnation that everyone knows, and we did a tour of Kent, right, when we were sleeping in cars and on floors. And
yeah.
At that time, it was like, no one really knew. I mean, these guys had done a tour before, but not that many people knew the band, and they certainly didn't know any of the new songs we were playing. So, and also, I think at that time, people were really like, what the hell is this? I don't know if it's good or bad. What the hell is it? But it seemed that it was starting to generate some interest, and it was a kind of new sound for a lot of people, and we got picked up by Marianne Hobbs, who worked for Radio 1 rock show back then, and she started playing us a lot, and the band started to really gather momentum and gain a following, and we kind of, our career was kind of going really well. And then there's something that kind of happens to bands when they get stuck in the UK, and we never really branched out. We're doing a lot more foreign shows now than we ever did back then, so we kind of got stuck in this small little world that the UK is, and back then the press really kind of owned the music scene a lot more than it does now. Now everything's online. If people want to find out about a band, they find out themselves. They don't need to buy a weekly magazine in order to tell them what's cool, what's not, who to go and see, what's on. It's like it's all there on the internet, so the magazines and the press don't have that kind of power. But you know, there's something that happens to a band when they come out and it's new and fresh. Everyone talks about it. After a while, it's like, oh yeah, they're playing all the time. So our career didn't really go downwards, but it just didn't seem that there was the same buzz about the band. And we went off and did a second record, which we consider to be our best record. And I wouldn't say it didn't get a good reaction, but there wasn't the kind of buzz around the band that there was in the first couple of years. So it kind of felt like that our career was petering out a little bit, and then people split off, and then this amazing thing happened in the years away, is that people really got to grips with the band and finally got what we were about, and it took people a few years to really understand and appreciate what we do, I guess. So
yeah, it's quite a satisfying feeling, because we kind of knew when we were writing the music, we had a feeling that a lot of people should and will connect to this, but maybe not yet, you know. But yeah, and the first EPs and the first album, we were like that kind of buzz band, you know. But after a while, yeah, because I mean, it comes down to money most of the time. Bands that get on the cover of magazines and things are the bands that can sell copies of magazines. Equally, the bands that are all over the press all the time, it's because some way, shape or form their popularity is making the money. But with a band like Sixth, we kind of took on our fan base, and everybody became obsessed with Sixth that was in the Sixth circle and got their Sixth tattoos and stuff. But then that was it. There was nothing beyond that. We had our little world. And so when we went to do our second album tour, our tours would always be well sold out and packed, but it would always be our core fans, which is why we're still here now, and why we've that fan base developed, because people who really fall in love with a band, they don't just go off them, you know, they stay with them forever, and they tell their mates and their brothers and sisters and all the rest of it. Whereas there's bands that were on the cover of Kerrang back then who were much bigger than us that nobody knows who they are now. So I think we're lucky with that. I think the fact that we put our effort into our music is why we're sat here now, being able to have fans across the world. It's because people, I think, maybe, yeah, I mean, maybe it was a bit early for that stuff, and now people get it and they realise the importance of it, which is a really, on a personal front, like on a songwriter's front, is the most satisfying thing, like,
definitely.
And you were talking about, you know, bands suffering because of money and not having money to sort of keep going as a band. So how has it been for you guys, like, back in the day when you were, you know, when you started out to, say, vis-a-vis now, when, you know, you are sort of that big band, at least
two
in our eyes, you know?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think when we first started, we were just, you know, we're obviously all in with parents, etc., etc., all had shitty jobs, and then when we signed our first record deal, it was for quite a lot of money, and we didn't, instead of taking money in our pockets, which would have been a bad idea, we decided to spread it out and take a small wage. And now we managed to survive through most of our early to mid 20s, but very,
But you were doing music full-time then?
For full-time, yeah. For a good 5 or 6 years. And we were lucky, but really, in you know, we weren't in any way comfortable. It was very, it was hard. But because you're always doing band stuff and you know, because you live with your parents or whatever, you can afford to just do it. But then, you know, being in a band, full stop, is a hard way to make a living. Being in a metal or progressive metal band, where you're not gonna get a lot of the opportunities a lot of sort of poppy young bands would get, so it's not feasible to be able to make a living. The only way you can do it is from merchandise and live. And I guess if we were to come back and do Sixth full time now, yeah, we're more popular, yeah, we get paid more money, we could probably make a really good living doing it, if we did it full time. You know, it's weird, it's ironic really, because if we'd have been in that position then, everything would have been fine and the band probably wouldn't have split up. Because you get to your late 20s and you're like, I don't have enough money to survive here, and you have partners who want you to sort of support them or whatever. Being in a band's a hard thing to it's a hard thing to base your life around, you know, because it has a kind of a limit. So I wouldn't say we ever got rich doing six. Well, I definitely wouldn't say that. And will we ever get rich doing six? Probably not. But I think now at least we can justify being able to put time into it, because at least it can cover life a bit more.
And we can pick and choose the things that we want to do now. It's more of it's on our own terms. Like, no one's we're not tied into anything. If we don't want to do something, we don't have to. It's something we always agree on as the six of us. Like, we'd love to come to play a festival in Mumbai. Let's go do it, you know. And we don't have to go and do. You know, I think back in the day, we probably made loads of stupid business decisions, not being aware of the kind of impact that they have. But I mean, one of the biggest things is, like I said before, getting stuck in the UK. You know, if we'd have, you know, signed different record deals and gone further afield, then your career would be different. You can survive that way. But when you get stuck in just one small market, you can't keep touring the same places over and over again, playing to the same crowds over and over again. It's just your popularity is going to wane. But
now that always came down to money, didn't it, and management decisions. It was always a, we can't afford to do this, we can't afford to do that. And back then, you take advice and you do as you're told, kind of thing. But
we ended up just touring just to pay things for previous expenses as well. Like, the last couple of years were tough. Like, I can see why the band kind of split up.
Yeah, we'd had a really acrimonious, bad split with our first label, for one reason or another, which ultimately, because of the contractual clauses, meant that money that was about £80,000 that should have been in our account that ultimately wasn't. So we were in a lot of debt. So for the last 3 or 4 years of the band, we made no money. Every penny that came into the band was to pay off our creditors, because this money that should have come in never came in. So when you're playing gigs night and day, when you're getting shouted at by your girlfriend or whatever, I won't speak for you, but I bloody was, like, when you're like, why haven't you got any money? And when your friends are going, but the band's popular, but why have you got no money? And things like that. After a while, it starts to take its toll, you know. And then when you start to find other ways of earning money outside of the band, like for me, it's producing, you start to realize, you start to associate a lot of negativity with being in a band, you know. And I remember quite kind of symbolically our very last ever London gig, which was Islington Academy, which was sort of like 2007. I think that the last pennies of the debt we owed was paid off, and we were square, apart from about £1,000 with someone. And it was kind of, it was symbolic as well. Well, the band's over and we got here, and every penny we've ever made has not gone in our pockets.
The last 2 years was spent paying off the debt just to then split up. It was like,
yeah. So the only memories you can have are the good ones, like playing on stage, and the good bits. But everything else, if we're honest, was shit behind the scenes.
The last couple of years were tricky. I mean, that's what's so great about coming back now, though, is that the band has, it's been self-generating fans in the time that we've gone. Like, all the work that we put back in then obviously wasn't a waste of time, because we're now able to come and do stuff like this. So
it's the positive sort of next chapter.
Nice. And so, like you said, you know, the music really spread while you guys were away, you know, and obviously you had people in India downloading and listening to it. So what's your take on the whole downloading music piracy thing, especially for you guys? Because I think it's helped a band like yours in, you know, more ways than one can imagine, you know.
Yeah, it's, I think it's different for every band, and for us, thank God for it, to be honest, because there's no way we'd be popular in Nepal and India and places far afield without the internet.
Because yeah, you just wouldn't be able to buy a copy of our album. But I mean, this is the thing, obviously initially it seemed like, because we, you know, we were fortunate enough to sign a deal just before the internet had this huge like impact on the music sales. I mean, I remember, you know, being able to copy CDRs and thinking, amazing, I can just borrow a record off my mate and just copy and have a digital version of it. And that was like, wow. And then it was like LimeWire and everyone downloading stuff, and you know, our first record deal was just on the cusp of that time, so we were kind of we still got a good record deal, but you know, the scene's changed and people are still making a living now. It's just in a different way, you know. You make your money from your merchandise and you're touring, but it seems like the infrastructure's there to make that work now. Bands are coming back and they're doing, and I think that's maybe why you're seeing so many bands reform now, because that kind of downloading thing probably did have an impact on their career. And at that time, you know, there wasn't as many shows or as well-paid shows, or, you know, people weren't buying as much merch or whatever, and it must have affected their careers. And now it's like people can come back and do what they love doing, and you just don't expect to make a lot of money from your record. Your record is what you make in order to promote your touring and your
merchandise, everything else. That's the thing, you can't pirate a live act. That's the beauty of a live act. You can't fake that. That will always be there. And bands will always, apart from bootlegging, bands will always be able to sell t-shirts, because again, people want official merchandise. So really, if people reset their minds and how they expect to make money from being in music, and accept that, like you say, the music part is the bit that we'll just give away, because we have to accept, give that away. But it facilitates everything else. So, like, and ironically, bands can make, I mean, that's the thing, we get paid really well to come and do a show like this in Mumbai because people pirated our music.
Yeah. So, I know you've probably answered this before, but what was the reason you guys did split up, and what has brought you back now?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose we have kind of answered that in previous.
Yeah.
What we were
the
going
debt,
on
obviously.
About. Exactly.
But
yeah.
Was that the only thing, or was there anything?
Loads of things. I think if we had have been making money off the band in the last 2 years, it probably wouldn't have come to a head so quickly. But I think it was going that way anyway. I think that there was sort of direction. As musicians, I think we were really happy working together. The four of us were like getting better and better at, you know, bouncing ideas off each other and working together in the rehearsal room and at home and writing. But there was more and more of a rift coming between the musicians and the singers, I guess. Like, Mikey wanted to just write his ideas at home on Pro Tools, and, you know,
He didn't want to connect with us
at that point, yeah. So.
And he would admit that now, that he fell out of love with being in a band and being in this band.
And metal, he wasn't really, he was listening to lots of sort of alternative stuff, loads of Nick Cave and Leonard Cohen and anything that wasn't metal, basically. And so there was obviously this divide between us. But I mean, I think that gets exacerbated when, you know, you don't have any money, do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so
you look for a way out kind of thing. And he clearly didn't want to do the other things that came along with being in a band. Like, we'd be offered tours in America, we'd be offered this, that, and the other. Mikey just didn't want to do it. He was done, I think. So there was even talk, and he suggested at one stage, he said, look, I'll sing on the records, but just get someone else to do my bits live. And we realised at that point, well, this is not going to work, you know. But that's how he felt at that time, right? And he I think he regrets that, but equally, you know, I'm great believer in fate, so that was right at that moment.
Yeah,
because now we're back, and now I think he appreciates what he's achieved with the band a lot more now, because he's been without it and he's realised the good things about it, not just the negatives. So yeah, you put all those things together, and also it was the getting to your late 20s, and for me, I'm quite a key part of the band creatively, and I fell out of love with it too, because I was starting to make a living producing other people's records and realized, wow, I can actually afford to eat dinner tonight, you know. And I was quite inspired by that. And I thought of sick as this negative part of my life. It's sad that money can have that effect, really. But it's, you need to be able to live, so. But you know, none of us have ever, especially the musicians, I mean, the pride that we have in our music has never gone away. I've always just felt completely proud of what we've achieved, you know, and I've always heard the music and felt positive, always. I've never sort of gone, oh, God's sick, you know.
Yeah.
So that's why it's easy to pick it up now and play it again.
It's really fun in a way, actually, isn't it? Just be able to get out there and play those songs that we're so proud of in front of so many people and see that kind of reaction like we had last night. So,
yeah, the feeling you get from playing that sort of music, you know, certain elements to the songs where you just have a grin on your face, think, wow, you know. Because it's putting everyone together and making everyone play at the same time and creating a noise. That's the beauty of being in a band, and you can't fake that. It's just a thing. It's a combination of everybody's skills put together.
All right, so we are a food show at the end of the day. So I've got to ask you guys, what do you like to eat? What are your favourite foods?
I do really like curries, actually, and hot foods. So
this is dream gig for you.
This is great, yeah.
I'm really into Thai food. I spent a lot of time in Thailand, so I love Thai curries and Massaman curries.
Those are really good, too.
Absolutely love them. And I love tapas, eat a lot of Spanish food.
Have you eaten any interesting food while you've been here in India?
I haven't eaten as much as kind of like. I mean, I had some tikka paneer. My ex was a vegetarian. She used to eat paneer curries all the time. So I had a paneer wrap, which was really nice, which was really hot.
Yeah, the wraps were good. They were pretty hot. I like hot food, but they're pretty hot.
If they were hot for you, then they were really hot for me.
I'll throw a chili in your Sikh kebab.
Okay, so
make his brutal, not mine.
Not yours.
My glasses will steam up.
And you guys, I know this is generally hard to answer, but do you guys have any like interesting, funny stories from your time on the road that you know is etched in your memory?
God, loads.
Yeah, I'm
just
trying to think
which ones we can say.
Trying to think of any that wouldn't be really embarrassing for certain members of the band, because generally, like, a funny story involves someone doing something really stupid, embarrassing, and so.
Well, any stage accidents, let's start with that.
I mean, Dan will love telling you about how I fell off the stage, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, he's fallen off the stage before.
A few times.
There's a really funny one, but I might have to tell you those off camera because I think certain individuals will get offended by that. But there's a certain one involving someone taking some laxative tea before the show, not realizing it was laxative tea, rushing to the toilet, realizing there was no toilet paper, and then having to go through the venue to the girls' toilet and missing the first song.
Yeah,
I won't tell you who that was.
They weren't present on the stage.
Yeah.
Yes, maybe a hardcore Sikhs fan can go through all the videos and find out which show had a missing member and the first song.
Yeah.
Awesome. And do you guys have any hobbies that are like, what do you guys like to do for fun, apart from playing music, obviously?
I go to the cinema a lot. I love watching movies, play golf, play a lot of golf, and I'm obsessed with Formula One, like, completely obsessed.
Yeah, man, to be honest with you, it's hard to think, because most of the time we are making music or trying to make a living, and I like travelling, so, you know, this is great for me, yeah. And movies, I suppose.
Awesome. And a lot of metal musicians actually don't listen to too much metal, like, you know, you mentioned earlier. So, do you guys still listen to a lot of metal, and, you know, what's on your playlist currently?
I do listen to a lot of metal, but it does tend to be the same metal that I was listening to sort of 10 years ago, so I'm trying to think of any bands that come out recently that I find really exciting. Even the ones that I think of aren't that recent. I mean, Gojira are cool. I mean, they're not that recent now, but they're a good band. But yeah, and new stuff that's come out that's exciting to listen
What's
to.
What's on your iPod?
What's on my iPods? Loads of stuff. All of us are really into kind of 90s metal, I guess, the kind of metal that we grew up listening to. So I reckon all of our iPods have got loads of Pantera, Slayer, Metallica, Megadeth, that kind of stuff.
Sepultura,
obviously.
Alice in Chains,
yeah. Lots of sort of 90s.
Crowbar. Yeah, we kind of, I wouldn't say we're stuck in our ways, but kind of we our values in terms of metal and how we think of metal and creating music, it's never been bettered since then, to be honest. And it's not us being old and out of touch.
Yeah.
I think, although there's a lot of great musicians now, and the djent scene has proven that, there's a lot of people who can really play. I personally think the Sugar have got a lot more to do with that than Sixth have, if I'm honest. But equally, I think a lot of metal hasn't advanced. A lot of the bands have done really well in metalcore and all that stuff. They're all heavily influenced by bands and sounding very similar to bands like At the Gates or Slayer or Pantera. And I personally think in the 90s it was done in the best way. I can't imagine why I'd want to listen to most metal bands when I could go back and listen to Far Beyond Driven, because I think it was just the pinnacle of heavy metal.
On that note, are you ready to taste the Sixth kebab?
Absolutely.
Definitely. Yeah. Awesome. Starving.
Let's go get that Sixth kebab. So we're back, and guys, here's the Sixth kebab for you.
Looks
please
incredible.
Dig in.
Excellent. Thank you very much.
So how do you eat it? You just
fold it and dig in. Yeah, and the plate is there because it is juicy, I think.
It's going to be a mess. Mm. This looks amazing, Dave.
Right, good. Yeah, that's great.
That's uber. That's incredible, dude.
Thank you.
That's our own special kebab.
Yes, you have your own special Sixth kebab.
It's so good, man. It really is. Really nice.
Awesome. So Sixth have given the thumbs up to the Sixth kebab. We'll see you on the next episode of Headbangers Kitchen.
Here for the Lowe's early Black Friday deals? You're right on time for some of our biggest savings. We're talking up to 50% off select major appliances, plus up to an extra 25% off when you bundle select major appliances. Holiday lights going up soon? Select ladders are up to 50% off right now. Get Black Friday prices without the Black Friday crowds. Lowe's, we help you save. Valid through 11/19. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last. See Lowe's.com for more details.
Hey guys, have you heard of Goldbelly? It's this amazing site where they ship the most iconic, famous foods from restaurants across the country, anywhere, nationwide. I've never found a more perfect gift than food. Goldbelly ships Chicago deep dish pizza, New York bagels, Maine lobster rolls, and even Ina Garten's famous cakes. So, if you're looking for a gift for the food lover in your life, head to goldbelly.com and get 20% off your first order with promo code GIFT. That's goldbelly.com, promo code GIFT.